100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark.
ABC News. I'm Andy Field. The president says he's not negotiating with Republicans over raising the debt ceiling, but he has agreed to meet with Speaker Kevin McCarthy. McCarthy's demanded Democrats cut spending in order for Republicans to raise how much the U.S. can borrow in order to avoid a first-ever government default. Indiana police still processing the scene of an attempted mass shooting at an Evansville Walmart, where a disgruntled ex-employee went on a rampage against former co-workers. The family of a black man who died after being tasered by Los Angeles police officers are suing the city for $50 million. The entire act captured on body cameras. Attorney Ben Crump represents Keenan Anderson's family, who says he was tasered multiple times.
The companies even warned that it shouldn't be more than 15 seconds max.
Anderson was a 31-year-old father and D.C. English teacher visiting relatives in Los Angeles. Wall Street ending the week up. This is ABC News. The family of an Orange County, California public defender still is not sure how or why he died at a Mexican resort.
The attorney general in Baja California is working on the investigation into Elliot Blair's death, but his death has been ruled an accident due to what Mexican officials say was a fall from the third floor of the resort. Blair's body is still in Mexico. Mexican police have completed a second inspection of the hotel and sent more evidence to a crime lab. Blair's family believes he was murdered. Local officials tell ABC News he had an injury to his forehead that would not have been caused by a fall. Alex Stone, ABC News.
Actor Alec Baldwin facing involuntary manslaughter charges in the accidental deadly Rust movie shooting. A surge in Cuban and Nicaraguan arrivals at the U.S. border with Mexico in December led to the highest number of illegal boarding crossings recorded during any month of Joe Biden's presidency. Mr. Biden has since added new restrictions to those nationalities. Andy Field, ABC News.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. Civic Media.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. A teenage boy charged with kidnapping and sexually assaulting an 87-year-old woman in Waukesha faces a trial set for May. Khalil Perry pleaded not guilty yesterday. Police say he kidnapped the woman at knife point, robbed her, then assaulted her. Perry's lawyers wanted him tried in juvenile court, but the judge disagreed. There's a new chancellor in charge at UW-Whitewater. The Board of Regents is tapping Corey King for the post. He's the fourth chancellor at Whitewater in recent years. Jim Henderson quit last spring. Dwight Watson left in 2021 after a cancer diagnosis. And before that, Beverly Copper left after her husband was investigated for sexual harassment. In sports, Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers tells the Pat McAfee podcast this week he needs time to think about his future. You're listening to Civic Media Fox Valley.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Go by any construction site in Wisconsin, you're going to see a lot of Michael's trucks. Since 2014, they've had more than $1 billion worth of contracts with the state government.
A large part of those coming with Foxconn without any results in that area.
Do we want a governor who might be giving his brothers the contract? I think he needs to answer that before the election.
We'll just kick that one down the road. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it, but of course, Michael's corporation would get to build that said bridge.
Listen Monday through Friday from 2 to 3. It's Dueling Tangents.
Hey, sis, missed you this morning. Kim told me you weren't feeling well, so I'm just doing a self-care check.
Ah, thank you, friend.
How you doing?
Girl, listen, my energy was so low because I didn't eat breakfast when I got up, so I had to miss virtual yoga with y'all.
Trust me, I understand.
But I'm doing much better now that I've eaten, so I'm back on track.
Great. In that case, let's get some steps in tonight. I'll come over and we can walk around the lake.
Sounds good. Appreciate you being in my business, too. Now, let me get in yours. Did you check your blood pressure today?
I did that and my squats, okay?
Okay.
High blood pressure is not going to be my friend if I can help it. See you at 6?
Let's get it. See you then.
Now more than ever, it's important that we protect our hearts and the hearts of those we love. Check in on one another and be a part of a healthy blood pressure movement. Rally your squad to take the online pledge at releasethepressure.org. Brought to you by the Release the Pressure Coalition and the Ad Council.
From Oshkosh to Green Bay and points north, wherever you are in the Fox Valley, count on us to keep you connected, informed, and entertained. Civic Media.
If Friday nights mean fish fries, we're your station. Civic Media for the Fox River.
I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I saw this. Catherine Rampell, she wrote something great. She said, there's been a scientific breakthrough. She said, researchers have identified a previously unknown species in D.C., you know, like the cicadas. She said that these species stay underground for years at a time, typically 4 or 8 year intervals. And its members hide away until an auspicious change in the ecosystem. But then they bust out and wreak havoc. These species? Republicans who care about deficits. Yeah, when they're not in power, don't care. Spend like drunken sailors. The second they can hold a Democrat hostage, the second they can hold working people hostage, oh, do they come out to wreak the havoc. And here to share some thoughts on the havoc, I've asked our good friend Morris Pearl to come to share some thoughts with us. Morris is the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks, Rick.
So have you seen these creatures, these Republicans who seem to care about deficits every so often?
Every so often. I mean, the way I explain it, Rick, imagine that your spouse gave you a budget of $50 to go to the grocery store to buy something. And you spent the $50 and you came back with the groceries and you thought you were doing a great job. And then weeks later, the spouse says, you know, we have to cut down and this credit card bill is too high. So I'm not going to pay this credit card bill for this groceries unless you agree to, you know, give up your prescriptions that you get every month. And that's exactly what it is.
Yep.
A president spends exactly what the Congress orders him to spend to the penny. And then they come out months later and say, oh, the deficit's too big. So we have to cut down on paying for the stuff that you've already bought. It's like absurd.
I wish I could do that. It just doesn't work that way in the real world. But in GOP thought, I think they see this as an opportunity to get their pound of flesh. And again, we've been talking about this for the last several days. The pound of flesh is, let's stick it to working people again. And because it's telling to me that what they're holding trying to hold the country hostage over is cutting Social Security, which does nothing to add to the debt. By law, it can't. So
exactly.
It's very telling to me.
They just want to do something to feel like they're doing something to screw somebody else. And they won the election, they're in power, and they get to, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's the cruelty is the point, I believe. Because, you know, destroying Social Security and Medicare have been on their wet dream list for a very long time. And it seems all the time, that's the club they pull out of the bag. And I keep asking my working class friends, how do you vote for people who keep telling you they want to make your life worse?
And what are your friends answer, Rick?
It's always some bit of the outrage candy. It's the race theory that's critical. It's the drag queens and it's all this other stuff. And I'm going, no, none of that stuff affects you. They're talking about destroying your ability to have a retirement, to be secure and not living in poverty when you get older. They're talking about doing that to you right now. And there isn't the outrage that I would hope to expect.
And it's because their voters, the voters who are really like a rung or two above the bottom, they want to have someone to look down on.
Yeah.
That's what they want. I remember I saw that in To Kill a Mockingbird. You know, the white guy who accused the black guy of raping his daughter, he needs someone to look down upon. And there's no, I don't have any answer for him, because he's right. Because if we succeed in helping the people who are most poor, he's going to go from one running above them to being tied for the bottom. And if that's what he cares about, having someone to look down upon, he should vote for Donald Trump.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. And this plays out in other arenas as well. I mean, you know, the minimum wage pops into my head, because I can't tell you how many people go, well, I only make $15 an hour. If you raise $15 an hour, I'll be making minimum wage. You go, no, dum-dum. You'll get a little bit of bump too. Everybody gets a little bump. That's the reason corporate America is against it. Not just because the minimum wage worker is going to get a bump, but because everyone gets a bump and they have to share their profits, which they don't want to do.
Yeah, that is true. That is what we saw in the paper the other day, that the mandatory food safety training for huge numbers of workers is being taught by a company that's a nonprofit owned by the National Restaurant Association, which lobbies against raising the minimum wage.
Yep.
So every one of these workers who's trying to get a certificate to be a restaurant worker has to spend $15 to give to lobbyists who are trying to prevent him from earning $15 an hour. It's like maddening.
There's something Orwellian about that.
If the Teamsters tried to do that, it would be illegal. They're not allowed to use mandatory fees to do lobbying.
Yeah.
Apparently somehow the restaurant owners are.
It shows you just how screwed up things are. And you know, here's the thing though, and this is where I'm growing more and more frustrated with our political system, because this idea that, you know, you saw Kyrsten Sinema and the other one, Manchin, over in Switzerland, high-fiving each other that they're not going to do anything on the filibuster. And you got Manchin, you know, coming out with this Trust Act, which I guess is going to, we're going to do another Simpson-Bowles-like committee that's going to come up with more bad ideas to harm working people under the guise of, well, we're working in a bipartisan way to solve our debt problems. And I keep coming back to this because it's so important that people understand.
What debt problem?
Exactly.
What debt problem? Have you been working, have you been struggling to pay off the national debt? No. And no one has either. It's not a problem. The United States of America has the unique advantage of the fact that they create U.S. dollars.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like if you promised someone that you'll give them an IOU next month. That's not hard.
So let's talk about that for a second then, Morris, because, you know, most people have the kitchen table economics ideas that, you know, I owe $1,000 on this. I have to pay that $1,000 back. I have a mortgage that's, you know, 2.5 times my yearly income. You know, I have a huge debt to GDP ratio. We think in those terms. They train us to think that way in terms of the debt that we owe. How is that different?
Well, it's different for the specific reason that the United States of America prints money. They literally do.
Yeah, but you have to pay it back, right?
They print it. No. People use dollars. As long as we have as long as we don't have so many dollars they become worthless, you can have more. It's kind of like the debt the government issues and the dollars are kind of the same. You can exchange one for the other whenever you want. And the total number of dollars in existence, yes, has been up over time. And yes, people have seen some inflation. Some of that is because more working people have been getting some money from some of these earned income tax credits and things. Yes. And we've seen some inflation, but not so much that dollars are becoming worthless. As long as the amount of stuff we have in the country is more than the amount of dollars we have, we're doing fine. And because each dollar you have in your pocket means you can get a dollar's worth of stuff. And as long as there's more stuff that you can buy, and I'm sure there is, Rick, your dollars have value and the government can make more of them. That's what they do. It would be kind of like Delta Airlines complaining they're running out of frequent flyer points. They don't run out. They can just change the numbers in your account whenever they want. And it's the same way. The government works the same way. They can change the numbers of how many dollars are in the bank whenever they want. It's not like your individual checking account where you have to put money in before you take money out. It's different if you're the one who creates the money.
Right. No, I get that. And but they've trained us to think in this way that, you know, we have this huge number that our minds just can't comprehend. Because you have $34 trillion. I have no idea what that looks like. I don't even think you know what that looks like.
I wouldn't dream of knowing what it looks like. You know, what they want is people to accept the fact that there's this underclass in America, because that's how they get people to work without having a fair share of the profits. Oh, there's not enough money, that we just have to work for whatever the boss tells us to work for.
Yeah, no, that's what they want
is a bunch of people who are willing to work for starvation wages, because that's what a certain part of the economy is sadly based on.
No, you're spot on. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Morris Pearl. Morris is the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires Group, patrioticmillionaires.org, their website, if you want to check out the work that they do. Now, the rich and powerful came together in Switzerland. I wanted to get some of your thoughts on the World Economic Forum meeting and all of the pomp and circumstance and all of the, all the folks, you know, hey, look at me, all the pimping and preening that went on. Talking about how we're going to solve the world's problems without actually talking about what I think is the largest problem in the world, massive redistribution of wealth that steals from workers and, well, the distribution upward the lack of sharing. I'm curious your thoughts.
I mean, we actually had a few members of our group, Patriotic Millionaires. A few members of Patriotic Millionaires were in Davos, Switzerland, protesting, not as official members. And we've been telling these people that, frankly, they're failing. And they're going to fail completely with the gross inequality that the current system is encouraging. Like, they tried that in South Africa when I was a teenager. Apartheid. It did not end well for the rich people either. And people are getting fed up. We've got people marching in the streets. 2 years ago, we had people rioting in the Capitol. People are not putting up with this anymore, and that's why they're voting for, you know, radical solutions on the left or the right or the middle or wherever, because they're not putting up with, you know, a few people getting richer and richer and richer, in part because they don't pay taxes, while the rest of you who get taxes deducted from your paycheck every single week are not able to get ahead. And, you know, one of the things we work on, Patriotic Millionaires, is in at least making it more fair so the rich people get money deducted from their income too, the way that everyone who works for a living does. And that will slowly have some effect to even things out, whereas a little bit more of a share will go to people that work for a living and a little bit less of a share to the 1% that has a humongous share now. And that's one of the things that we've been working on at Patriotic Millionaires, in addition to minimum wage.
Now, let's talk about that for a second, because the Republicans came out with their tax thing this week, which I argue would make things inequality much worse. It would be a massive tax on working people, and I think would cause enormous inflation. It's not going to pass. It's not going to get anywhere. But just the fact that they threw it out there, a federal sales tax of 23% starting in 2025, would, I think, would cause massive problems. But it would be a huge savings for folks like you, who I don't think you spend an awful lot of money. So we wouldn't get that much from you, I don't think.
Well, people with high incomes, it'll be a big win, because they currently pay more than 23% of their income in income taxes. But people with low incomes, who are in the 10% bracket, and who are living paycheck to paycheck, which most people are if they're only earning a few tens of thousands of dollars per year, they'll all of a sudden go from 10% income tax to 23% income tax. It'll be much worse for them. Whereas the people who are now in the 37% bracket and save a lot of their money, they'll go to paying 23% on part of their money and nothing on another part. So it'll be a huge win for high-income people and a huge loss for low-income people. And frankly, that's what the Republicans want. They want less money for the masses and more money for the small donor class or whatever you want to call them.
So what's the right direction? Because we do need major tax reform. I've been hearing a lot about a wealth tax because, you know, like you see it all over social media. You got these rich guys saying, hey, I don't pay any taxes because I don't have any income because we only tax people who work on income and, you know, and capital gains when you win on Wall Street. How should we go about ensuring that we get the resources we need?
People look at, you know, the really rich people like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and whatnot. And the reason they don't pay income tax is they don't have any income. And you don't need the income if you're a billionaire. If you're a billionaire, you can live off the billions you already have. You don't need to work. You don't need to have a regular paycheck. So if you don't have an income, you don't have an income tax. And of course, I mean, when you think about it, of course, if you're a billionaire, you don't need the income. But so we want to have some tax on money people make by the value of their stock going up. I mean, that's how these guys made all of their money, essentially.
Right.
But it's not taxable, not at all. So we are suggesting that, and Senator Wyden is also suggesting, more with more power than we have, he's the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, we're suggesting a tax either on the amount that your wealth goes up or on your absolute amount of your wealth that would somehow make the very rich people, the billionaires, pay some taxes. And people would still be incentivized to get rich. I don't think anybody's not started a business because they said, hey, you know, I don't want to bother becoming a billionaire because I'll have to pay some tax on my second billion.
Yeah, what am I going to do with all this money?
Forget the whole thing. No, I think most people will be very happy with the few tens of millions. And those people who really do get into their second, make their second billion, it's okay to charge them some taxes on that second billion.
No, of course it is. Because ultimately, do we need to have a handful of people with the kind of power that Elon Musk is abusing right now?
Well, I mean, some ways money becomes power and power becomes money because you can use power, you can use money to get more political power and then use your newfound political power to change the rules to make even more money. And it's sort of a cycle of getting more power and more money.
Thanks.
And we're not going to change it. There's nothing we're proposing that will really change that. We charge people a few percent of their second billion. No, they'll still be billionaires and very rich and able to, you know, run for office if they want to. But we will at least make things a little bit more fair for the millions and millions of Americans who work for a living and have tax deducted from their check every week.
Yeah, a little bit. PatrioticMillionaires.org is the website. Check that out. Morris Pearl, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Always great talking with you. I look forward to having you back again real soon.
Thank you, Rick. I'll be back. See you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Good stuff, our good friend Morris Pearl. Make sure you check out the website, patrioticmillionaires.org. I'm going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. For working people, come to talk. Fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/historytoday.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you may remember, it's been a couple of months, and we're working to get, we're looking to get Andrew Warren back on the show. But you may remember this Andrew Warren, who Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, suspended because, you know, as a state attorney, Andrew Warren, you know, said that, you know, his office would not prosecute certain crimes. And, you know, DeSantis, you know, suspended him, threw him out of office in a very dictatorial way. While the court ruled today, according to the Tampa Bay Times, the U.S. District Judge Robert Hinkle, he says, look, you know, the allegations that DeSantis made, they're false. He wrote in his ruling that Mr. Warren's well-established policy, followed in every case by every prosecutor in the office, was to exercise prosecutorial discretion at every stage of every case. Any reasonable investigation would have confirmed this. He ruled DeSantis violated the Constitution of the state, violated his, you know, the state attorney's First Amendment rights, all this stuff, but is not going to put him back into his position. Claims he doesn't have the ability to restore him to office. And this is, again, is another one of these things where you have politicians, we have Republicans who are willing to break the rules. You know, rules be damned. They don't apply to us. We're going to do what we want. And they get away with this stuff time and time again. And yeah, they get the slap on the wrist. Oh, you're wrong. Don't do it again. But it's never made right. Now, understand what they're doing here. He's saying, you know what? I'm accusing you of something that you didn't do, but you're not going to prosecute the crimes that I want. I have the power, you as an elected official, I have the power to oust you. And my Republican friends are like, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He's not prosecuting the, you know, the fill in the blank. Here's my problem with this. These very same people would lose their ever-loving freaking minds. And look, J.B. Pritzker and the governor of Illinois, not going to do this. But if Pritzker went in and removed all the more than 70 sheriffs in Illinois who publicly vowed that they would defy the law of Illinois on this gun, this assault weapons ban. If he went in and removed all of them, the right would lose their ever-loving freaking minds. But if you use the same justification, he's not following the law. They got to go. This is what having this kind of, this outweighed power and people who are willing to flout the law and willing to break the law, this is what happens. So yeah, get a slap on the wrist. Don't do it again. Don't do it. Bad. But no power to make the person whole. No power to hold him responsible. And DeSantis is looking at it going, okay, I'm wrong. Yeah, so what? Still not getting back. Don't care. This is where we are. You have a Republican Party right now hell-bent on their way or the highway. And again, this is where my Democratic friends, this is where, you know, you have to figure out how you're going to deal with this. You know, it's like any relationship. It's the one who cares the least has the most power. Republicans care the least about this country, which gives them so much power because they are willing to trash it. They are willing to burn it down. They are willing to destroy it. Look at what they've proposed. Look at what they've come forth with. Just, you don't need me. You don't need my interpretation. Look at what the first club on the out of the bag is on talking about what I don't even know is a constitutional debt limit. They're going to use the debt limit to make working people's lives better. And if they don't get their wet dream, they don't get their fetish met by destroying Social Security and Medicare, they're going to crash not just the American economy, but the global economy. Oh, Rick, you're being hyperbolic. No, no. If you don't pay the bills, things stop. If you don't pay the bills, our credit rating goes through the roof. We end up paying more. But don't worry about it. Don't worry. They've got an exit plan. That exit plan? Shoot the hostage. Who's the hostage?
The Shah 101. Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. The president says he's not negotiating with Republicans over raising the debt ceiling, but he has agreed to meet with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. McCarthy's demanded Democrats cut spending in order for Republicans to raise how much the U.S. can borrow in order to avoid a first-ever government default. Indiana police still processing the scene of an attempted mass shooting at an Evansville Walmart, where a disgruntled ex-employee went on a rampage against former co-workers. The family of a black man who died after being tasered by Los Angeles police officers are suing the city for $50 million. The entire act captured on body cameras. Attorney Ben Crump represents Keenan Anderson's family, who says he was tasered multiple times.
The companies even warned that it shouldn't be more than 15 seconds max.
Anderson was a 31-year-old father and D.C. English teacher visiting relatives in Los Angeles. Wall Street ending the week up. This is ABC News.
From Green Bay to Oshkosh and Point South, wherever you are in the Fox Valley, count on us to keep you connected, informed, and entertained. Civic Media.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. A teenage boy charged with kidnapping and sexually assaulting an 87-year-old woman in Waukesha faces a trial set for May. Khalil Perry pleaded not guilty yesterday. Police say he kidnapped the woman at knife point, robbed her, then assaulted her. Perry's lawyers wanted him tried in juvenile court, but the judge disagreed. There's a new chancellor in charge at UW-Whitewater. Board of Regents is tapping Corey King for the post. He's the fourth chancellor at Whitewater in recent years. Jim Henderson quit last spring. Dwight Watson left in 2021 after a cancer diagnosis. And before that, Beverly Copper left after her husband was investigated for sexual harassment. In sports, Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers tells the Pat McAfee podcast this week he needs time to think about his future. You're listening to Civic Media Fox Valley.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
We have a full hour with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley.
Yes, thank you for having me. So glad to be in studio.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
You know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, whether you are a union member or a business owner, picking up your garbage has no partisan lines. Making sure people can get to and from work shouldn't have partisan lines.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry, always on the Civic Media app.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. on WISS 1100 AM 98.3 FM Oshkosh Air Support.
Organic methods, rain gardens, and rewilding your yard with things like prairie grass. For help, go to rewild.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the fun and entertainment that we're getting out of Congress, and you do this, you knew we were going to get it. You knew the fun was going to begin when McCarthy basically sold his soul to be Speaker. And look, I look at this George Santos thing, just as, or Anthony DeVolder, or Katrina Carita. I don't know what his drag name was, but it's getting weirder and weirder. And what I find interesting, all of my Democratic liberal leaning friends are, no, he needs to resign. Stop trying to save the Republican Party from themselves. This is who they are. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, well, where we are and where things are going. I've asked our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to come share some thoughts on, well, one of the claims that Santos made, that if he served just one term in Congress, health care for life, pensions for life. Got to get some thoughts on that. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you, Rick.
So this is out of all of the lies and all of the things, and we could talk about that if we have to. The thing that caught my attention is he actually bought the idea that you serve one term in Congress, health care for life, pension for life.
A relative of mine, I won't say who because she listens to your show, emailed this around a few years ago to everybody, and I had to break it to her. There were a couple of things on there that's sort of true. But the one term and health care for life, not true. Pension for life, not true. $175,000 pension for life, not true. So maybe Santos, who's told a lot of lies, actually read that and thought it was the truth.
Yeah, I'm just stunned at the level of misinformation that flies around in those circles. That people, what is it, would they call it the Mandela effect, I guess? Or you think something's true that really isn't?
Right.
It's just remarkable to me. And what do you make of this? Let's real quick of this Santos situation before we get into some serious stuff. I'm of the mindset, just if you're the Democrats, shut up and let the Republicans deal with this albatross, because he is really what the current party is. It's all about the show. It's all about the spotlight. It's all about, hey, look at me. It's not about governing or policy or even saving the institutions. It's about attention seeking. And he is the culmination of well, this whole movement.
Well, it's political entertainment gone mad. There is one thing about all of this, though, and I can relate it to a lot of different cases. I'll just relate it to one. Al Franken. You know, Al Franken did not have his chance. You know, he won the Democratic congresswoman from New York, went after him, resigned, and, you know, it all piled on, and he never got his chance to go before the Ethics Committee. And it was acceptable. Okay, you leave. You know, we find you guilty without your day. And when people were talking about, including Republicans, you know, we're not going to seat him. Well, I don't care who you are, if you show up and you're, you know, totally psychotic, whatever you are, if you have a certificate in your hand,
yep,
and it says from your state, you're the member, you're going to be seated. Number two, they couldn't do anything about him beforehand anyway, because how can you take somebody to the Ethics Committee that's not a member yet? You know? So now he's in there, and I don't know, if I were there and if I were the Democratic side, let him sit.
Absolutely.
Let him go on a committee.
Absolutely.
It's the Republicans' problem. Democrats have run into some of this where, you know, the Republicans should have just sat back, you know, and let it go. And they didn't. On Santos's case, obviously there's something horribly wrong with him. As you know, Ricky hasn't developed any friends out there. He came in, he wasn't, you know, down low, repentant, et cetera. He just came in, you know, going at it just like he has before the election. And now the longer he stays, there's questions about did some of the top people, campaign people, or leaders know that everything was fabricated?
Yeah, how could you not? I mean, seriously, how could you not? If you're doing the, if you paid for the opposition research, because every candidate does this, right? I mean, when you run for a first time, you want to know what your opponents are going to say about you. You spend some money to dig into your own past, and you work with an investigator to do that, right?
Well, we call it research.
Yeah. No, you're investigating your past. You want to know what's in your closet.
Expensive.
Even if you don't know what's
in
your closet.
We do it. If we don't do it, guess what? The political parties do it. Sure they did. And by the way, the researchers, you paid big money. I mean, $10,000, $15,000, $30,000 for these things. You know, we've done it. It's been done against us. That's the way it goes. Here's the thing, though, Rick, about this. This was easy. The first $1,000 on opposition research, and by the way, the parties do it on their own candidates. The first $1,000 told you that he wasn't who he said he was, even education-wise. The first $1,000.
No, that's the first $50.
Yeah.
So the question is, and this is where I keep coming.
Sure, this was known, but time went on. He was going to win. It was a seat. It's a vote. And then, of course, you know, eventually he gets thrown out or he quits. They have a special election. They bear through whatever, 90 days or whatever, hoping to win another seat again and then have a vote.
Yeah, do you think he resigns?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if he'll resign.
I don't see it in any way, shape, or form that he's going to resign.
Yeah, I mean, you've asked the right question. Normally I would say yes. I don't see it because he's got some kind of huge mental issue here. Something is not clicking right.
Yeah, I'm not going with that. I think he's just a con man. I don't know that that's a mental illness. I think he's just a con man.
Doesn't
former guy.
Some of this, like, narcissism and you know, making falsifications, some of it even goes beyond con man to where it's some form of a illness.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's gone on so long, it's turned into, you know, a constant psychosis of lying for the guy.
Yeah, he's believed his own BS. I mean, you look at, but this is who the Republicans have been putting forth. Look at Herschel Walker. Look at Trump. Look at the people that they've put forth who've created these fantastical stories that people have bought into, even though a lot of it is based on, well, Santos, total BS, but most of it's BS.
Well, and look, people follow people. Herschel Walker, who had his chance with his family, who privately went to him and said, let's all go clean. I mean, they were offering to really probably elect him, all right? They offered him that. His 21-year-old son.
Yeah.
And he didn't do it. And it was one revelation after another. And he, I don't know that woman. Well, yeah, you have a child with her. The DNA shows that. But he just kept going and he kept getting votes.
No, it's crazy where we are. And the sad reality is, and I keep coming back to this, Democrats have to stop trying to bail them out and let them be who they are. Because this is who, sadly, this is who the Republican Party has become. Want to get some of your thoughts on the classified document stuff. Evidently, there's classified stuff everywhere. You know, I was checking my closet to see if maybe I stumbled on some classified stuff. I know you were in Congress a while. I'm sure you got some cute folders laying around.
Well, they sent 5 storage bins full of my stuff here and held it while I was being held, incarcerated. And I got out, and there were, you know, constituent documents in there, which, you know, I personally went through everything and shredded those documents. But I was just thinking, you know, somebody packed all this stuff up and just put it in these bins. There could have been other people's office things in there that weren't mine. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I do know that there are those in this system that are, okay, here's the difference between Biden and Trump, and here was this and here was that. The bottom line is, you know, when the president spoke on the issue, I think it was yesterday, and he said there is no there, and then he made a statement at the end, and this one bothers me. I'm following what the lawyers have told me they want me to do. That was President Biden's answer. You know, that's what Trump says.
Yeah.
So lawyers told me to do it. It's a political wash. It's a legal wash. We can argue all day long. You know, yes, Trump fought it. Trump reacted different. But the bottom line is these documents must be all over the place, all over the government. It goes back to the efficiency of the United States government. Now, just think about it.
No, I am. I'm, you know, because this is not new. I mean, Hillary's emails. I mean, there was even talk, you know, back during the Condi years that, you know, who knows Who knows? If you go back far enough, you know, how many of those colorful folders are laying around? And I want to get your thoughts on Trump's latest gymnastic on why he had the stuff. He said that evidently they give out these classified documents and they put them in cute little envelopes, cute little folders that have words on them, like classified and confidential and other words. Other words. I don't know what other words he was talking about, but classified, confidential, and other words. And he thought they were nice keepsakes because they only collect the documents. They don't want the folders back. So he's kind of a hoarder, I guess, in that he hoarded all these folders. There were no documents in it because he claims the FBI stuffed those in there. You buying any of this?
Well, I mean, I would believe that Trump would. I do believe that Trump would particularly keep empty folders. Now, what those folders will say is they'll say classified or they'll say top secret, and they'll have usually a number on them. That number somewhere connects to something in a database somewhere that tells you what's in that folder if you can access it, okay?
Right.
I do believe, think about this for a second, he would collect empty folders and one day sell them on eBay. Well, come on, am I wrong?
Not on eBay. I mean, this would be a way to fleece the flock even more. I mean, he's got them buying flags and hats.
Whatever. You know.
No, okay. But
pass him out with a trading card.
Educate me, if you will. Because, you know, maybe I don't understand how classified documents are handled. You said there's a folder. It's got a number. There's a document associated with that folder and that document that they track. How is it that these folders then get to go by the wayside? How is it that we lose these?
Well, they come in a folder, and I don't think necessarily they're taken back necessarily in that folder. They're passed out. Normally, they're returned. The folder could be returned, or the document would be returned. It would be most likely, you know, shredded or taken back to the source where it came from, or it would be stored in the White House and then eventually moved, you know, into the archives. I mean, they could do it that way, too. Yeah.
Is there a way to maybe fix this problem? I mean, because now, you know, this is, you know, a major kerfuffle on both sides. Maybe this is a bipartisan opportunity to go, you know, there seems to be classified, confidential, top secret stuff floating around. Maybe we should, I don't know, get a handle on that?
Well, they should. There's a couple of lessons here. Number one, for those who buy into the whole government QAnon conspiracy deals, okay? The government's doing this and doing that. It should teach everybody that the government is not bright. The government messes stuff up. They can't even handle classified documents. That it's not like they produce 30,000 of these things.
Right.
Here's one to Donald Trump. Here's one to the chief of staff. That's two. We want two back, right?
Yeah.
It's easy to count these things. It's not like they're distributing them to thousands of people at one time. I mean, the government is not efficient. The second thing I think we can learn from this is that there's got to be a better way to do this system. How on earth, when you know that document 5, number 6, came from the NSA, document 6, number 7, came from the CIA, it went to Donald Trump, it went to whoever, Joe Biden, how do they not know then what occurs and where those documents go? Because they're not supposed to be reproduced in any fashion. So how do they not know? There's got to be a way that, and when a president leaves, that these are accounted for.
Yeah.
This is a learning lesson because, you know, no matter who did what, I'll bet you if they look back, they're going to find, you know, something in Texas on a ranch, you know, with Bush. They're going to find something. And here these documents are floating around everywhere and just literally just shouldn't be.
Is this a big deal? I mean, honestly, I mean, we're talking about, you know, former presidents having this stuff, part of their archives, part of their libraries. Is this something for us to really get all worked up about? Because I got to imagine that this is not a new situation.
No, I think this goes back. As far as a big deal, yes. And I'll tell you, as legally as I can tell you this one. Previously, I saw a document. And how that document came into the hands of the United States government was the key to the document I saw. And you don't want that kind of document revealed because then it tells other people how we acquire things. Now, we all know that's how the whole, you know, system runs.
Sure.
So I've seen documents myself that shouldn't be taken out anywhere, as other members of Congress have seen them, because it tells our opponents, foreign countries, too much. It tells them what we're doing, how we're doing it, or somehow leaks out how we're doing it. So this is a big deal, whether it's a member of Congress that, you know, somehow classified information is leaked, or how we got it's leaked, or whether it's a not a leak, but whether it's a president hanging on to these things. I mean, these were documents. We know North Korea, Iran. What are in those documents? And if they went into the wrong hands, and here's the other thing. Both Trump and Biden, I'll make this fair, their lawyers are looking at it. Who gave these lawyers classified clearance?
No, excellent point. No, but here, I think the reason this is now a thing is because I actually believe that as many have said, that Trump would sell these on eBay. And that is a problem. Whereas I don't think any of the past presidents, you know, George Bush or Reagan or any, I don't think any of them would have done that, or I would have even thought that they would have done that. I don't have the same feeling of confidence that Trump wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we all know that, you know, the other presidents have had a more sense of respect of the institution and the nature of the institution. I think we all know that, or we, at least we all should know that. The problem with these documents is that, let's say Biden had no awareness, which I don't think the president had awareness of, you know, the Iran document was there or the whatever document was there. But the fact remains those documents are laying around, and you know, somebody finds them, and I don't know, the janitor, who knows? They just shouldn't be laying around. So, yeah, you know, you have to start worrying about who actually can see these things happens to them.
No, I'm right there with
some of them have got to be so sensitive that seeing the document tells you things you shouldn't know about how we acquired the document, and that's the danger.
No, you're right. Lastly, I want to get your thoughts on this week's entertainment in the House. They've got a new tax bill going to bang around, basically reviving the old Steve Forbes flat tax with, what is it, their fair tax scheme. We're going to have a 23% federal sales tax.
Well, you know, there's the Fair Tax Act, as they've called it. They've called it, when I was there, there was the flat tax, which Dick Armey of Texas had supported. And the flat tax was a different concept than this, you know, the sales tax, which is a problem. Of course, sales tax, they say, well, if you buy a Mercedes-Benz, you know, you've got enough money to buy a Benz, so therefore, you know, it's a more fair tax. But, you know, tax on products, some people that are just the average John and Susie Smith have to buy things, and to pay a national sales tax on them, I think, would be a problem. I would assume that the Republicans would support a flat tax before they would go down that path of trying to do a sales tax.
Yeah, I mean, the argument is that it's a fair, it's flat, it's the same for everybody. Making that argument that it's, you know, it's fair for everybody. It's not. Working people would get massively screwed. You want to see inflation go through the roof? Add 23% to everything you buy.
Right. That's why the flat tax was on income, where Bill Gates pays the same percentage, you know, that I pay.
Yeah, but Bill Gates doesn't have any income.
But what's that?
Bill Gates doesn't have any income. He doesn't collect the paycheck like you do.
I mean, you'd have to correct that, too, to prove Bezos and, you know, and Bill Gates aren't actually technically in a homeless shelter. Yeah. So, but the sales tax, I always did think, and then say, well, we won't put food in there. Well, thank goodness. But it's still, you have to buy certain products.
Yep.
You got a baby. You got to buy certain products. And, you know, who wants to pay the average person to pay tax on that?
Going to be fun and entertaining to see how what comes up next. But Bob, as always,
nothing's going to happen on that. I'm going to find the entertainment with the speaker meeting with the president, and that's not the entertainment value, meeting with the president on the debt ceiling. The entertainment value is going to be watching the caucus, watching the landmines that McCarthy has to walk through when he walks to the White House and back, and he gets near Capitol Hill, that's where the landmines are going to be.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. Bob, I appreciate the time. As always, good stuff, my friend.
Thank you, Rick.
Good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. No, I mean, it's let the fun begin. Going to take a quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the top. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1909. This date marked one of the deadliest workplace disasters in Chicago history. It took place a little over a mile offshore near 71st Street on Lake Michigan. A group of predominantly Irish laborers were working on a tunnel to bring fresh water to the city's growing south side. The work was grueling, and the conditions were frigid and dangerous. Workers were paid as little as $1 to $2 a week for their labor. On this date, the workers were housed in a wooden crib on the lake. For reasons unknown today, a fire broke out in the workers' sleeping quarters. It was rumored at the time that someone had sprinkled gasoline around to ward off bed bugs, but no cause was ever confirmed. The fire quickly consumed the wooden dormitory that housed the tunnel workers, leaving the men with little choice but to begin jumping into the freezing lake and climb onto ice floes. One man was able to make a frantic telephone call to the offshore office. Relaying the message, the crib is on fire. For God's sake, send help at once or we'll be burned alive. The tug! And the line went dead. Accounts vary, with estimates between 40 and 70 men dying from the fire and drowning. The exact number is uncertain, because many of the workers were day laborers and migrant workers. Little information about their identities remains. Some of the bodies were never recovered. Some that were found were buried at Mount Greenwood Cemetery, where a plaque reads, "In memory of crib fire, 45 unknown men, January 20th, 1909. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So I've gotten a bunch of emails on the classified document stuff. And look, if Biden had them, and he did, he's got to be held accountable. But the question then comes back to, how are we handling these documents? How is it that this stuff gets, left laying around? If that's the reality. Now, the difference, and trying to have this argument of justifying one over the other, not politically going to be helpful. This is where, as a government, maybe we take this as a learning opportunity. Oh, I don't know, to fix it. I would have thought after Hillary's emails, maybe we would have tightened that up a bit. And, as I've said, I've talked to a number of people who have had, high security clearances and how these documents are supposed to be moved along and how they're supposed to be tracked. If this were just an average, somebody lower down on the totem pole, much greater consequence. But because these are presidents and vice presidents, we're handling this differently. Now, from my perspective, there are two very different situations. Yes, both had classified documents. And we got to find out why. And trust me, there's going to be hearings. There will be subcommittees. There will be all kinds of testimonials. There'll be all kinds of stuff on why Biden screwed this up. And it's all Biden's fault. We understand that. It's coming. Get ready for it. But seriously, as a nation, we should be demanding that the people in charge of these documents do a better job. Because the reality is if they get into the wrong hands, our enemies, our adversaries, they're going to find out information that probably we don't want them to have. And I'm pretty sure across the political spectrum, We don't want Iran or North Korea or Russia or China having access to our classified information. Just like they don't want us to have access to theirs. We got to do better. I want to hear your thoughts, though. You got a justification? You got a mental gymnastic? I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you download the podcast wherever you get.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green.